The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a powerful organ. Indeed, its influence is so prodigious that strict rules have had to be drawn up by its editorial staff to prevent its misuse. So none of its field researchers are allowed to accept any kind of services, discounts, or preferential treatment of any kind in return for editorial favours unless A. they have made a bona fide attempt to pay for a service in the normal way, B. their lives would be otherwise in danger, or C. they really want to. Since invoking the third rule always involved giving the editor a cut, Ford always preferred to muck about with the first two. He stepped out along the street, walking briskly. The air was stifling, but he liked it because it was stifling city air, full of excitingly unpleasant smells, dangerous music, and the distant sound of warring police tribes. He carried his satchel with an easy swaying motion so that he could get a good swing at anybody who tried to take it from him without asking. It contained everything he owned, which at the moment wasn't much. A limousine careered down the street, dodging between the piles of burning garbage and frightening an old pack animal which lurched, screeching, out of its way, stumbled against the window of a herbal remedies shop, set off a wailing alarm, blundered off down the street, and then pretended to fall down the steps of a small Italian restaurant where it knew it would get photographed and fed. Ford was walking north. He thought he was probably on his way to the spaceport, but he had thought that before. He knew he was going through that part of the city where people's plans often changed quite abruptly. "Do you want to have a good time?" said a voice from a doorway. "As far as I can tell," said Ford, "I'm having one, thanks." "Are you rich?" said another. This made Ford laugh. He turned and opened his arms in a wide gesture. "Do I look rich?" he said. "Don't know," said the girl. "Maybe, maybe not. Maybe you'll get rich. I have a very special service for rich people." "Oh, yes," said Ford, intrigued but careful. "And what's that?" "I tell them it's okay to be rich." Gunfire erupted from a window high above them, but it was only a bass player getting shot for playing the wrong riff three times in a row, and bass players are two a penny in hand-doled city. Ford stopped and peered into the dark doorway. "You what?" he said. The girl laughed and stepped forward a little out of the shadow. She was tall and had that kind of self-possessed shyness which is a great trick if you can do it. "It's my big number," she said. "I have a master's degree in social economics and can be very convincing. People love it, especially in this city."
"Goosnarg," said Ford Prefect,
which was a special Beetlejuicean word he used when he knew he should say something but didn't know what it should be. He sat on a step, took from his satchel a bottle of that old jank spirit and a towel. "Want some?" he said, after he'd had a swig himself. She shrugged and took the proffered bottle. They sat for a while, peacefully listening to the clamour of burglar alarms in the next block. "As it happens, I'm owed a lot of money," said Ford. "So if I ever get hold of it, can I come and see you then, maybe?"
"Sure, I'll be here," said the girl.
"So how much is a lot?"
15 years back pay.
"For?"
"Writing two words."
"Zach one," said the girl.
"Which one took the time?"
"The first one. Once I'd got that, the second one just came one afternoon after lunch."
A huge electronic drum kit hurtled through the window high above them and smashed itself to bits in the street in front of them. It soon became apparent that some of the burglar alarms on the next block had been deliberately set off by one police tribe in order to lay an ambush for the other. Cars with screaming sirens converged on the area, only to find themselves being picked off by helicopters which came thudding through the air between the city's mountainous tower blocks.
"In fact," said Ford, having to shout now above the din, "it wasn't quite like that. I wrote an awful lot, but they just cut it down."
He took his copy of the guide back out of his satchel.
"Then the planet got demolished," he shouted. "Really worthwhile job, eh? They've still got to pay me, though."
"You work for that thing?" the girl yelled back.
"Yeah. Good number. You want to see the stuff I wrote?" he shouted. "Before it gets erased. The new revisions are due to be released tonight over the net. Someone must have found out that the planet I spent 15 years on has been demolished by now. They missed it on the last few revisions, but it can't escape their notice forever.
It's getting impossible to talk, isn't it?
What?
She shrugged and pointed upwards. There was a helicopter above them now, which seemed to be involved in a side skirmish with the band upstairs. Smoke was billowing from the building. The sound engineer was hanging out of the window by his fingertips, and a maddened guitarist was beating on his fingers with a burning guitar. The helicopter was firing at all of them.
Can we move?
They wandered down the street, away from the noise. They ran into a street theatre group which tried to do a short play for them about the problems of the inner city, but then gave up and disappeared into the small restaurant most recently patronised by the pack animal. All the time, Ford was poking at the interface panel of the guide. They ducked into an alleyway. Ford squatted on a garbage can while information began to flood over the screen of the guide. He located his entry. Earth, mostly harmless. Almost immediately, the screen became a mass of system messages. "Here it comes," he said. "Please wait," said the messages. "Entries are being updated over the sub-ethernet. This entry is being revised. The system will be down for 10 seconds. At the end of the alley, a steel-grey limousine crawled past.
"Hey, look," said the girl. "If you get paid, look me up. I'm a working girl and there are people over there who need me. I gotta go."
She brushed aside Ford's half-articulated protests and left him sitting dejectedly on his garbage can, preparing to watch a large swathe of his working life being swept away electronically into the ether. Out in the street, things had calmed down a little. The police battle had moved off to other sectors of the city. The few surviving members of the rock band had agreed to recognise their musical differences and pursue solo careers. The street theatre group were re-emerging from the Italian restaurant with the pack animal, telling it they would take it to a bar they knew where it would be treated with a little respect. And a little way further on, the steel-grey limousine was parked silently by the curbside. The girl hurried towards it.